Demon fans, and welcome back to the Demonland podcast. My name is Andy, and under new coach Stephen King, the Demons have made footy fun again. Regular listeners will know I've often had a cloud of negativity hovering over my thoughts when it comes to Melbourne, but this year something feels different. For the first time in a long time, I'm starting to believe again. There's a growing confidence in the way I feel about this team that I've only really experienced briefly before during that 2021 period and into 22 and 23. The two seasons after that brought the dark clouds rolling back in, and honestly, I thought it would take an eternity before I could even begin to hope again. But something is happening at Demonland. Something is stirring. Something is building. And it's happening far quicker than any of us could have imagined, even in our wildest dreams. At the game on Sunday, against a side already being talked about as a genuine premiership contender, I actually believed that we were always in it. I believed we could win. That's how much this team has shifted the mood. They're playing with dare. They're playing on instinct. The players are backing themselves in, and more importantly, they're believing in themselves. The belief is contagious, and I'm absolutely loving it. Now, I'm under no illusions. I know we haven't solved everything. There'll be bumps along the way. There'll be moments to test us. I'm still a realist after all. But for the first time in a long time, I'm not a pessimist. At least not this week. Let's see how I'm feeling after gather round against an Essendon side currently sitting on a 17-game losing streak. That old Andy would already have let those dark thoughts creep in. But maybe, just maybe, I'm a changed man. Maybe this really is the dawn of a new era. I'm currently on holidays for the next few weeks, so Bin Man will be holding down the fort and presenting an amalgamation of the main Demonland podcast and his long-form stats files. This will be the method of delivery of both the podcast and the stats files for the next few weeks, as well as for the review of the Bombers and Lions games. We will return to regular programming after the Anzac Day Eve game against the Tigers. So without further ado, here's Bin Man.
Thanks for that warm introduction, Andy. Hope you're doing well over there at the chalet, and the powder is soft and you're enjoying yourself overseas. Obviously checking out the cheese factories of Europe as a Demon fan, and I look forward to having you back in the country and in the host seat on your return. So welcome to all the Demonlanders out there. Fantastic game this week. This show is going to be a bit of a combination of the standalone stats file pod that I've been doing and, of course, the Demonland podcast. So I'll see how it goes. I will try not to make it a hour and a half, 2 hour long show. As much as I like the sound of my own voice, I'm conscious that even I could top out and be a bit wearisome over that length of time. So I will do my best to be sharp, and an hour is my target. But last time I said that on the stats file pod, I said half an hour and brought it in just over an hour. So let's see if I break that rule again. What a terrific game of footy. It was so exciting. I missed last week live because I was away. It was just terrific to be at the G. Perfect day. The ground looked in amazing condition. It was still warm. The crowd, I thought, was just incredible. So if you were listeners, and I guess anyone who is a, or most people who listen to this podcast, given it's a pretty niche fan-only podcast, were probably there. And if so, good on you, because the sound was amazing. 24,000 people. I would have sworn it was twice that just from the volume. I watched the replay when I got home, and the booing came through loud and clear from some of those bewildering umpiring decisions, or should I say non-decisions, you know, things we weren't paid. But the atmosphere was awesome, really, really awesome, and a thoroughly enjoyable game. It's just awesome to watch this team at the moment. Really, really terrific win, and we'll get into it. The show, the structure for a show is, I'm sort of roughly going to follow the file pod structure with why we won or lost. I'll talk about equity points really briefly, the three phases of football: defense, offense, and contest. And then I'll answer the listener questions, which I'll put through the small language model, the Bin Man Intelligence artificial intelligence, the BIA, and I promise I've got no 70% success rate or error rate, or no 70% accuracy, and I put them through the BIA, those questions that people put in on Demonland in that post, in this in the podcast post thread, I should say, on Demonland, and come up with 10 key questions from that, which I will get to. So jumping straight into it, why we won or lost. Look, the simplest answer is, I think just about the most impressive thing about the whole day and the performance was we won or lost, I think, because apart from the first 10 minutes when it was pretty equal, I just think we were the better side on the day. You know, we were dominant for much of that match, just like we were against the Blues in the last three quarters. Even though we only scored the one goal in that first half against the Blues, I thought we were dominant in the second quarter and certainly the third and fourth. Outside that first 10 minutes where, you know, they played well and I thought we broke even, we were the better side, but particularly from the second quarter on. So I thought that was massively impressive. I think as a caveat, I think it's reasonable to say that coming off a bye, it really is a variable. But as a generalization, of course, some teams buck this trend. But as a generalization, teams do struggle after a bye, particularly in that first quarter, to get back to AFL level intensity. And I'll touch on something relevant to that in a second. But so, you know, and the other part about Suns was that they had an underdone Raoul. He clearly wasn't as influential, but he looked underdone. He fumbled more times than I've seen him in his whole career in that match. And he's, you know, probably not quick at the best of times. So he looked a bit underdone. Humphreys was out, and of course so was Track. So their three best midfielders, or two, were out, and one was well down on his normal output. You take the three best midfielders out of our team, and we're going to struggle. Ditto for anyone. Take Bont out of the Dogs, they'll struggle. So I think that's, you know, that's important sort of context in terms of assessing our performance against a benchmark, who, and they were coming into this game the favourites to win the flag. I suspect after the weekend it might now be the Swans. I actually haven't checked, but the Swans were unbelievably awesome against a pretty poor West Coast Eagles, I thought. So, but, you know, all of that aside, it wasn't as if it was a lucky win. It wasn't those games where they didn't take their chances, we were still in it, and somehow we bobbed up with a win. As I said, we were the better side, and it wasn't as if, even though I thought they were a little bit flat and they weren't playing, you know, to that level that they have so far this season, or particularly against the Cats, you know, when they were super impressive. They were impressive in their other games, but there was Richmond and the Eagles, so they should have been, but they still played really well. And I actually think that apart from it took them a little while to get going, I think that a big factor in their performance was our tactics, our pressure, the way we played. And so I'll speak to that in a second. I think that's a really important, you know, that was frustrating last week with the focus on the Blues. What did they do wrong as opposed to what did we do well? In the little bit of media I've seen in the since the game, that hasn't really, people have been talking about how we played, which is much better. Not so much that they, you know, what did the Suns do wrong or poorly, but you know, so I think that that was a big factor in why we won. But ironically, a bit of the discussion about how we played in the media that I've seen is about our new run and gun style, and as we'll unpack in a bit, You know, we weren't actually, we moved the ball very quickly, but we weren't playing in the same way that we did. And I think tactically it was a really clever game from King and the team. So, but, you know, why we won or lost, I think that Hardwick in his presser, he was asked sort of a question about the Suns at the right at the top of his presser. And he said that, you know, sort of selectively quoting here, I thought he nailed it, the sort of basics of why we won and obviously why they lost. He said that at the end of the day, I just thought we got beaten around contest. I thought they were harder and tougher than us, a disappointed Hardwick said after the game. I thought our midfield had their colours lowered as well. We were minus 23 in contested possessions. I actually think it was minus 22, Damien. Minus 9 in clearances. They kicked 8 goals from stoppage. Our pre-clearance pressure was 2.2, which is just laughable. I don't actually know what that refers to, but I presume each area is, you can get pressure ratings for each area, which indicate, you know, demonstrate how significant that rating is for coaches and teams. And it's sort of a reminder that that pressure rating was actually brought in for by AFL at the behest of the AFL clubs because they wanted that information from Champion Data. 2.2 sounds like it's 220, so maybe they have higher pre-clearance pressure than that normally. So I thought our midfield had the lowest colour. Da, 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 da. They kicked 8 goals from stoppage. Our pre-clearance pressure was 2.2, which was just laughable. If you can't win the ball and you can't put pressure on at the contest, all of a sudden your backs are under enormous pressure, end of story. And I think just from a statistical point of view, that probably sums it up pretty well. The stats, of course, reflected Hardwick's assessment. The key stats we won that sort of really reinforces the point that Hardwick was making. We were plus 11 for clearances, plus 22 for contested possessions, and excuse me, reflecting our clearance and territory dominance, except for the second quarter, which I'll speak to a little bit later. We were plus 14 for inside 50s. A really interesting stat. I've talked about equity points through the season, and it measures the points players get across a whole range of areas for their player rating points. And there's different categories of equity points. Two of them, ball winning and ball use are the two ones that I've been looking at. But there's also equity points, family points collectively the team get in pre-clearance. And picking up Hardwick's point about pre-clearance, it was clearly on his mind. It was 48.4 equity points across our team that we won in pre-clearance. They only had 21.5. AFL average is 33. So it just goes to show that pre-clearance, he was spot on. It was obviously in his mind. The really interesting one, though, for me was keeping in mind that their one wood is their contest, a bit like the Blues, although they can move the ball, obviously, a bit better than the Blues. Ball winning equity points was 117 to us to 99.3 to them, plus 17.7. That is a shellacking for winning the footy. And remember, the equity points and player rating points, they measure impact as scoreboard impact. So winning the footy that results in a goal will obviously give you more points than one that results in a turnover and they get a goal. So we really smashed them for that season. 117 AFL average this season's 110. So given we're an outside team, given that ball use has been our strongest sort of comparative advantage this season with our equity points, that's a really remarkable number. However, so they're the numbers that point to statistically. As I said, pre-clearance equity points, 48.4 to just 21.5, plus 26 points we were for that. It just means that we were more impactful when we won contested footy our pre-clearance work. We were more impactful when we did. Really terrific performance from that perspective. Leaving aside the numbers, I think King deserves a lot of credit for the win. I thought he had an excellent coaching performance. And a big factor was his tactical smarts. And I don't think this has been mentioned as far as I've heard anyway in the media. He really should get a big pat on the back for his coaching and his sort of planning and strategy for this match. I thought it was a terrific coaching performance, really clever. One of the things that was really notable was our forward handball meters has been a really notable feature of our game this season. We're averaging high 200s for meters gained by hand coming into the match. And Suns were coming into this match number one in the AFL, and they are averaging 420 plus, I think 420 metres gained by hand coming into this match. However, we only had 63 metres gained by handball in this match, which a crazy 316 fewer than the Suns, who had 379 metres gained by hand. And that surely has to be tactical. Like, there's no way that that sort of statistical variance is, you know, a random thing. So I'm assuming there was clear tactics. Watching the replay, we definitely handball backwards and laterally more often than we've been. So as I say, I reckon there's little doubt that it was tactical. As I noted, the Suns, before this game, they were number one for metres gained by handball. The Swans are now number one after their long handball fest against the Eagles. They just destroyed the Eagles with those long handballs that opened up the game and create space ahead of the ball. After this game, they averaged 444 metres gained per handball. So it wasn't, you know, they had 379 in this match. So it's not as if they, you know, they weren't using those handballs, as was suggested in the commentary I heard. They're also number one for handball and number one in the AFL for handball received. They were still using lots of handballs, as I said, but I think we were super focused on pressing up on the receiver, and we often stopped or disrupted that long handball and their forward flow. We stopped them in their tracks. That was really supported by that squeeze we're putting on opponents this year, with the defenders pressing right up when the opponent has the ball and trying to transition from their back half. The forwards also squeezing up, so the other way. So that squeeze of the forward, forwards pressing up and the defenders pressing up, really creates congestion. So the Suns often found themselves in congestion with no great options forward or back. And they're not a precision kicking team like the Lions. In fact, their game plan is really similar to ours, with its focus on territory and winning contests inside 50 and ahead of the ball. So they couldn't or didn't use high risk kicks to open up us up the way, for instance, the Lions might look to do in a couple of weeks when we play them. So, you know, the Suns, they would have planned, I'm sure, 100% sure, they would have come into this game planning to negate our long handball, likely through the same sort of frontal pressure that we applied to them. But they couldn't, because we just weren't doing our normal long forward handballs, as evidenced by the fact we only had 63 metres gained by foot. Instead, we often went long by hand. Instead, we often went long by foot and off into a contest. And I reckon that was a clear tactic. And it was supported by really looking to stretch their defence, I thought, by putting Petty up forward in the second half, having Langford push forward into the forward line a number of times as a marking option, to an excellent contested mark, ditto for Cully, who spent most of the game deep forward. And, you know, we negated some of their key strengths. Not only did we frustrate their ability to transition the ball quickly, by doing so, they just couldn't get that overlap handball going in a way that creates space inside their 50 and lots of one-on-one contests. So a really good example of that play that they really like to do is the one in the end of the first quarter where King outmarked T-Mac on the lead. That was a really good example of how they like to move the ball from the back half and create space inside their 50. And that's really, that method has been the key really to their high scoring this season and ours as well. That King, though, that mark by King was really very much the exception to the rule. Those forward handballs, if the player defending doesn't get up on the receiver, it creates that tick-tack opportunity and then drags defenders out of the forward 50 or their D50, creating space inside 50. And they just couldn't get that going. It was interesting in the handball. So we had, how do you not get handballs gained? Because we still had, a pretty similar number of handballs total to them. Is you go backwards by hand. Normally we don't. Normally King really dislikes going backwards or even laterally by hand or by foot. But in this game we had, let's have a look, 1, 2, 3, 4, about 11 players who went had negative handball meters gained. Xavier Lindsay, Tom McDonald, Harry Sharp, Jake Melksham, Latrell Pickett, minus 10.3 metres gained by hand, Christian Salem, Harvey Langford, cult, and most interestingly of all, and again, I can only imagine this is tactical. So Jack Steelhead, minus 34.3 meters gained by hand. Really, really interesting. He is, you know, I think that's fascinating in terms of, you know, like his role. I don't fully understand, you know, how, why that is. I'd have to look again at the replay with a focus on that. But that helps explain our meters gained by hand and being such a radical difference. In many ways, apart from how quickly players move the ball on after a mark with a focus on territory and winning contests, clearances and stoppages. Yesterday was more similar to the method we used in 21 and 20, between 21 and 23 than our method in the preseason and the first three games. So, you know, that I thought that was really fascinating. And it's also interesting because Hardwick, you know, that style is Hardwick's style. Get it forward. Get territory, win the contest ahead of the ball. The other really interesting things I heard was Maxi, and or maybe it was Melky, say in a post-match interview on the ground, I think, that the team had discussed during the week that the Suns' first three games, they flogged the Cats in the humidity up on the Gold Coast, then beat up on the Tigers and Eagles, were all low pressure and low intensity. The implication being that the Suns may not be ready for our intensity and pressure if we bring it, and that's exactly what we did. And I think we, you know, we went in that first quarter behind, but we were definitely, you know, in the match 100%. As I said, you know, I think we were the better team for the last 20 minutes of that first quarter. So I suspect that was probably a theme for them during the week. Again, clever coaching by King. Kudos must go to him for that. And there was probably a bunch of other stuff around the stoppages. As George has noted on the podcast a number of times, that the way Maxi's rucking and hitting it out, you know, wide, really out in space, allowing our mids to run onto it, I think has been fascinating. So again, kudos to King, but also kudos to Nathan Jones, who was I was critical of last year because I thought our stoppages were terrible. And, you know, it's been really exciting to watch us play this year. In terms of player ratings, just briefly, Jack Steele was the highest rated player for us, 24.4, only a smidge in front of Maxi, who was 24.3. Cozzy, again, top three. Cozzy had 22 player rating points. He was even across all four quarters, but had a stunning last quarter, 7.9, a stunning second quarter, 8.3. Tommy Sparrow, he has another top five sort of best players, so really impressive performance from him. His ball winning was 4.8 equity points, his ball use was 3.8, so that's a really good split, total 15, so he must have got a lot of points for his ability to put pressure on, because that's 8.6 between ball winning and ball use. Kay Chandler rounded out the top five, another impressive performance from Chin. He had 12.9 player rating points. Notable others, Jakey Melksham, what a game, 9.5 rating points, really terrific. His ball winning and ball use were almost the same, and I noted that on the stats file last week podcast, that's a really noticeable aspect of Cozzy's game, that he's a player who can be elite by foot but also win his own ball, you know, so that's evidenced when those two scores are similar, and that was the case for Jakey Melksham. It was too for Langford, who was 4.5 points for ball winning and 4.7 points for ball use. Cozzy in this game was 6.9 for ball winning, but unbelievably for us, a way team high, 14.5 for how he used the ball. He got 14.5 of his 22 player rating points, 14.5 of them came from how he used the football. Again, it's a measure of scoreboard impact. His two passes, for instance, inside 51 to, well, the one to Rue missed, but it was a scoring, but the one that he kicked to was a Brody Majek, was just first class. That's how you get players player rating point. So incredible. By way of contrast, so our next best was Harry Sharp, 7.9. So there you go. Harry Sharp is having a great season. Just a note, Harrison Petty was our lowest rated player, 1.6. Bit unfair on him, and it probably highlights some of the weaknesses of the rating points. It really sort of, as I've mentioned a few times, it disadvantages defenders. But he played an important role as that second ruck and also pushing forward and really stretching their defense. I thought that was a big factor. Really interesting, as I mentioned earlier, really interesting tactical plan by what I suspect was a plan by King. Also brought the ball to ground up there, which is what those key forwards need to do. So really, really probably doesn't reflect, well, I don't think it reflects his influence on the game at all. I thought he was pretty good, Harrison Petty. On the other hand, Bailey Laurie was our second lowest, 1.7 player rewarding points, and I think probably does reflect his performance. I hope he does get another couple of games. Laurie, I can see him coming out this week, depending on who's available. And so just unfortunate he didn't really take his chance. He always started well, 3.1 points in the first quarter, but then dropped away negative 0.9 and then 0.5 in the last quarter. But it's hard to argue, you know, I think those player rating points were spot on in terms of the top five. Hard to argue that Seal, Maxi and Cos were our three best player. Maxi had 21 disposals, 16 contested possessions, 13 hitouts to advantage, 8 score involvements and a goal. Given our clearance and stoppage advantage, clearly I think the game's most influential player. I haven't seen the coaches' votes yet. I'd be really interested to see. I suspect they might have given it to Steele because Maxi gets enough votes. You know, maybe you could put a case together for Steele also being sort of maybe even equally influential, I guess. He had 26 disposal, 18 contested possessions, 11 clearances and 8 tackles. But he also did a job on Anderson really early. And then once Rao came on him, I don't think it was a hard tag, but he certainly was on him a lot at those centre bounce. And he's been terrific, hasn't he, this season? Steele, what a pickup. Cos was superb again, 25 disposals, 10 contested possessions, 10 inside 50s, 1 goal and a match high 633 meters gained. Just bananas. I'd pay my membership 5 times over again to watch that fella play footy. So exciting. Some of his kicking is just unbelievable. That run and the kick down to Latrell was just joy on a stick. And I'd love the way Latrell, you know, in keeping with the way we're playing our footy, which is, you know, the ball is not in the hands very long before it's off to another player. The way he jinked after Latrell marked that and jinked sort of to his right to and then play on immediately and then nail that kick to Van Rooyen, was just a thing of beauty. And Van Rooyen went back and from a difficult angle, just nailed a beautiful goal. It was just such a wonderful bit of footy. And, you know, again, footy's just been super exciting to watch. This game was super exciting. The crowd was really, really buzzing and up and about. Fantastic, really, really fantastic performance just from that energy. But that was really neat bit of play by them. Cos, you know, what a player. He's putting a case together. He's right up there, I think, in the most impactful best players. He's in the conversation for the best player in the AFL at the moment. So's Maxi for that matter. So, you know, incredible performance from our two best players and also our leaders, Steele being one of them. I mentioned already our equity points. Post-clearance, as I noted, was really notable. It was 133 to 153, the pre-clearance was really notable, 48.4 to 21. Post-clearance, however, and this is something that Hardwick puts a huge amount of stock in what happens after clearances. Post-clearances was 133 to 153. So they equity points. So they really hurt us in that regard once they got it past the clearance. The fascinating thing was, as I mentioned, our ball winning was better than theirs, plus 17.7, 117. What wasn't better than theirs was our ball use. And I think I'm right in saying that we haven't lost this so far this season. probably against Frio we did, actually. Our ball use equity points were 65 to theirs 86.6, so we're down 21.6. AFL average is 49.3, so still above that. However, we've been averaging, and above our average too for this season, 60. But we were well down on ball use to them. So they use the ball really well and impactfully. So I guess it's sort of, it's not too far, it's above our season average, so not too bad. But I thought that was a notable bit of data. All right, moving on to the three phases of football. Defense, some notable defense, the three phases being defense, offense, and contest. Some notable defensive stats. At halftime, the D's led a contested possession count by 11. We've lost that stat in all three games thus far this season for the whole match by an average of 11 per game. So 17th in the competition. We really turned that around in this game, and it was a big factor, as Hardwick noted in his presser, in us winning the game. At halftime, we also led the tackle count by 7, an area they've been excellent in this season. We also had 8 inside 50 tackles, inside our 50 tackles by halftime. I think we ended up with maybe 15. And so that was a super big factor, really showed our aggression and our intensity and what we were trying to do, territory and trap it in if we couldn't mark it, obviously. This really surprised me. We're averaging 13 more tackles per game than our opposition so far this season, ranked 2nd in the AFL. So again, this sort of idea that we're an outside team because we want to move quick is just not how we play. So, we want to move it quickly, but that doesn't by definition mean you're an outside team. And so we're winning contested footy. We're winning, tackling, our intensity's there. Our pressure was off the charts last week. It wasn't so high this week, but that was more about the game itself and how it was played. But it was super strong this week. Our intensity, and as Hardwick said again, he thought that was the big difference. I think that reflecting how hard we work defensively, and how strong our all-team defense is, but also what our athletic profile looks like for the team and the running power of this team. King, as I've talked about ad nauseum, it's all about leg speed, aerobic capacity. I talked on the Stats File podcast last week about hearing all the time now coming up from particularly recently retired players, running power and athletic profile, because that's all about what the game demands now. We've got a fantastic athletic profile led by players like Langdon and Sharp. But we had, sort of reflecting how hard we worked defensively, and I think to that athletic profile, we had the top 5 players for average speed in defense. And what that means is average speed in defense, it's poorly named, I think, but it means when the opponent has the ball. So it can be anywhere, not actually literally in defense. It's when the opponent has the ball. So we had the top 5 players for average speed in defense, and those top 5 players were, no surprise, number 1, 8.9 average speed for Langdon. Tolstrup was number 3. Tommy Sparrow was number 4 with 8.6. Bailey Laurie was 8.4. So, he in terms of my critique of his game, he obviously did what was required from a defensive running perspective. This one was the amazing one for me. So top 5 average speed in defense were all Melbourne players. Number 2 was Harvey Langford. So average speed in defense of 8.7 kilometers per hour for Harvey, which considering I've thought of him as a slow player, that's really impressive. But it also shows, his defensive intent, and that's exactly what's needed. All team defense, all team offense is King's philosophy. Some other defensive stats. Again, I thought our defensive effort was just first class in this match. We worked really hard to obviously tackle. Our intensity was great. I think, our defensive unit is super impressive this year. I was really critical of it last year. It is looking really strong. Howes, Lindsay, those players are playing terrific. Colt has been a revelation, I'd have to say, down back here. Much, you know, I didn't think he'd be playing at halfback flank. And Lever, again, as I mentioned last week, he's been stellar. Great to have Disco back. We had 64 intercepts in this game. They had 59. AFL average is 66.9. We had 12 intercept marks to their 9. AFL average is 14. So we're a bit down on our average this year. We're averaging 16.2 intercept marks. Had 12 in this match. We laid 59 tackles, so they had 54 with plus 4. AFL average this season's 54.7. Tackles inside 50, I mentioned, we had 8 by halftime. It was 13 by game's end. They had 6 plus 7 for that. AFL average is 10.2. Territory was fascinating as well. We dominated territory for big chunks of the game. For the match, it was 52% in our forward half, 48% in their defensive half. We really, you know, probably reflecting that first quarter where it was frustrating that we weren't putting the score on the board and had vision, you know, those heebie-jeebies about the last few years where despite winning territory, we just couldn't, you know, put it on the scoreboard. And that's what it was starting to feel like with all of those misses. 59% in our forward half in that first quarter, which is surprising. 41% to them. And just on that, that goal at right on the siren in the first quarter by Salo, I thought was really, really, really important for how the game shaped up, because it meant that we weren't 3 goals down or whatever it was, that, you know, we're in touch and we had some sort of, we got something from that domination of forward. I really have to look at this and sort of I'm going to watch the replay again because this surprised me. I have to say it was 64 the other way in the second quarter. So they actually dominated time in forward half, 60% in that second quarter. Shows our defensive unit really held up super well. Obviously, they were attacking right through that quarter. I wouldn't have guessed that. So 60-40, but then it reverted to the mean after that. 54% in our forward half in the third quarter and 58 in the last quarter. We're averaging 52-48. It was 53-47. So bang on our season average. That second quarter was a real outlier. On offense, some notable offensive stats. I'm not sure if that's the right stats about offense. At the 17-minute mark of the second quarter, we had 5 goals won, so 31 points, 5 won from our 8 entries. So what's that, 75% of the times we went inside in the first 17-minute mark of the second quarter, we scored. And that probably, maybe that's why it sort of surprised me with that 40-60 split, because we were just so efficient. And maybe I'm just surprised full stop. The D's are efficient going inside 50. Interestingly, all 5 of those goals were launched from a different zone on the ground. Defensive 50, defensive midfield, centre bounce, attacking midfield, and from forward 50. Just showing that, you know, last week it was all about our scoring from the attacking midfield. That's where our chain started. And, you know, at least for those 5 goals, it was all over the ground. So we for the match, we had 19 marks inside 50. Like, I'd be guessing that's, you know, that's really high. I meant to look beforehand where that puts us, you know, how many times we've had more than 20, for instance, in the last 5 years. But we had 19 marks inside 50, 5 more than the Suns, which is really, really notable given, you know, that they had King up forward and Walter and Reed, who he looks a likely type, I have to say. So 19 to 14 marks inside 50. That's not how it would have been drawn up by Hardwick. Just for context, we're averaging 15.2 marks inside 50 this season, so way up on previous years. Our last season, our average, for example, was only 10.9 marks inside 50, almost double yesterday for marks inside 50. Awesome. Meters gained total, from kicking was 5,488 to 5,222, plus 268. So below this AFL average of 5,651. But really noticeable because, again, it talks to, you know, we're plus 268 down on our season average, which is 5,709, also down on last year, so 5,545 last year, but 268 more meters gained than them. And what's notable about that is they're a real territory team. So again, Hardwick, you know, that's an area that he would have looked at when he looked at his numbers and thought, no, that's not good enough. I mentioned handball meters gained, 63 to 379. Transition stats, obviously footy now is all about transition and scoring from the back half. They measure transition stats, measure how often chains result in a score or an inside 50. Chains include all kick-in chains, all clearances and intercepts with at least one disposal in the chain. A couple of things really I thought sort of illustrated what happened in this game. Chain to scoring percentage is proportion of all chains that resulted in a score. Defensive 50 to score percentage, it speaks for itself. Just looking at that one, reflecting how well they've transitioned the ball from their back half this season, the Suns are number one in the AFL so far this season for defensive 50 to score percentage. And that's the proportion of all chains starting in the defensive 50 that result in a score. So they're number one in the AFL for that this season. And, you know, that's why everyone's talking about, you know, how well they transition, how exciting they are to watch, yada, yada, yada. However, for us in this game, defensive 50 to score percentage, so coming from the 50 and turning it into percent to a score, the percentage for us, it was 18.8% of the time that the ball started, a scoring chain started in our defensive 50 and we scored. 18.8, 13.3 to them, so plus 5.4. Really notable given that that's really one of their strengths. AFL average, so sort of by way, is 9.9 percent of the time teams are moving the ball from their deep 50 and scoring. So almost double that in this game. Really, really a good, great illustration of how well we're moving the ball from the back half. And that was a big factor in the win because they would have been expecting to easily win that stat. Similarly, defensive half, same thing, proportion of all chains starting in the defensive half, which is with the line in the middle of the ground, forward and back. Defensive half to score percentage was 19.3 to their 15.3. AFL average is 13.3. So again, we moved it really effectively from the back half. I mentioned chain to score percentage. Again, we were up on that. So our transition game was top notch and better than theirs, which is, you know, their strength this season, what everyone's raving about. 26.9% of the time, our proportion of all of our scoring chains, all of our chains resulted in a score, 19.6 to them, so plus 7.3. Again, AFL average is 22.2% of the time, so nearly 27% of our possession chains resulted in a score well above AFL average. Points from defensive half was the measure I've been using for the last couple of seasons to sort of get a sense of how good he's going with the red and blueprint, or how good he went with the red and blueprint. It's still a relevant stat, not as sort of relevant as those, or not as nuanced probably as those transition stats, but points from defensive half are almost bang on. We're averaging 39.8 this season. We scored 46 from our back half this week. They scored 45. We're giving up 39.8, so almost parity there. Expected scores, really interesting. Expected scores all season, every game we've been above, yes, even the Freo game, we've been above, our score has been above the expected score, and so has our opponent. So neither team could complain about our scoring. This was a little bit surprising. Well, actually not. Our score was 109. The expected score was 105.1. Gold Coast's expected score was 74.7. And they scored 89. And geez, their accuracy was amazing in that first quarter and in the beginning of the second. And fortunately, it fell away a little bit. But, you know, good kicking is good football. So on expected score, we won, 31 points. So on expected score, we win that game, but I'll take a 20 point win all day, every day. Score sources. We kicked a point from kick-ins. We're actually averaging 8.2. I haven't looked, but I'll bet you that would be pretty high up in the AFL in terms of scores from kick-in. Centre bounces, we scored 21 points to, we're averaging 12. They scored 6, so plus 5 there. Stoppages, 33 points from stoppages other than centre bounces, so to their 30, so beat them there as well. And turnover, we're almost on parity. This is really important stat in footy. We're averaging 53.8, which is acceptable. We scored 54 in this game, so a touch over our season average. They scored 47, a touch below their, a touch below our opponent's score from turnover this year, 48.5. So plus 7 for scores from turnover, plus 3 from stoppages around the ground, and plus 15 from centre bounces. Again, that goes to the comments that Hardwick made. We beat him. We beat him for clearances. We beat him for stoppage. And, you know, I've talked about this in other contexts, but also just in terms of that ruck dominance, it really supports winning territory, obviously, as well. Okay, next one, contests. Notable contest stats. Talked about this already, but we won the contested possessions by 22 for the match. Only one occasion last season, did the Suns lose that count by more than 20, just once. They've only lost the clearance count by double figures on three occasions last season, the Suns, though twice this season, funnily enough, so now three times. They lost clearances by 11, so we were plus 11 for clearances. Happened to them only three times last year that a team had won by had more clearances than the Suns by three. So they you know, really, you know, obviously clearances and contested work is critical to the way they play their footy. But I'll reiterate, they had Rao was down, and two of their best, or two of probably the best of their mids in Humphrey and Track did not play. So ground ball gets were almost even, 87-86. Post clearance contested possessions, 84-83. Contested marks 11-9. Talked about clearances already. It was 39-28 plus 11. Center clearances 18-9 plus 9. Stoppage clearances 21-19. We got first possessions 51 times in clearances to their 24. So plus 27. And I think, you know, that really helped us dominate territory. But first possession, so I think that was a really big factor in the game. First possessions 51 times to their 24. AFL average is 38, so well above that. We're averaging 40 so far, 40.5 this season, 42 last year. A notable related stat to that is, as I said, that Hardwick noted their pre-clearance pressure rating. He noted that in the press conference, which I thought was fascinating. It sort of shows how drilled down they are on numbers, you know, and how sort of granular they are even in the match. So obviously getting flogged in pre-clearance was on his mind. We were plus 21 for pre-clearance contested possession, so his concerns were well and truly founded. So, but the pre-clearance contested possession numbers are made up of hard ball gets, loose ball gets, ruck, hard ball gets, gather from hitouts, contested knock-ons, freeze. So we were 54-33. The big one was we're plus 3 for hard ball gets, plus 5 for rucking hard ball gets, plus 7 from gather from hitouts. And this is the one that jumped out at me, given the vorisifus yelling at the umpires. We were 8-2 for free kicks pre-clearance, so plus 6, that all adds up to plus 21. Centre bounce attendances, I mentioned this on the Stats File pod. Excluding our rucks, we had 9 players with centre bounce attendances against the Saints. We had 11 against Frio and 6 players against the Blues. I noted that last week. That was really fascinating. They clearly had a plan going into the Blues and thought they'll have their midfield, you know, a smaller group of midfield players, fewer runners going through there. I think because to mitigate the strength of the Blues, which is very much like the Suns winning clearances and stoppages. Well, that downward trend continued this week. And remarkably, and I think for the same reason, we only had the same reason as against the Blues to mitigate their strengths. We only had 4 non-rucks having CBAs this week. Coz had 27, centre bounce attendances. Coz had 27, Steele had, and Windsor both had 25, and Captain Jack Sparrow had 22. From a high of 11 to just 4 players this week having centre bounce attendances is a crazy number. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's tactical. Assuming that's the case, really clearly successful, given our clearance domination and given, as the opposition coach made the point, that it was a huge factor in our victory. Team pressure was interesting. It wasn't as high as what I felt it was going to be watching the game. 169 to 151 plus 18 in that first quarter. It shows, as I said, we were dominant outside that first 10 minutes. We were dominant for the rest of the match. But they really came to play in that second quarter, 191. Remember, 200's elite, 180 is considered average. 191 in that second quarter, so we're down 7. even more so for them after three-quarter time, their pressure was enormous, 182 to 170. This is the one I really love, though, and this I just love this number. Our highest number pressure rating was in the last quarter, which is when we want to be. You know, they didn't fall away. Theirs was 187, but we had three more, 190, and we ended up 178, 177 for the match. So that last quarter for me just showed that, you know, our desire to win that game of footy, super, like, you know, just their attitude, just watching from the stands, it made me really, really proud to be a Melbourne fan. The effort level from all players was just wonderful. I really, you know, that last quarter was one of my highlights for many years going to the footy. I enjoyed myself no end. It was exciting footy. And I have to say, just as an aside, is that I didn't feel like we were going to lose. Like, I felt really confident, and I just also found their time management really clever. The last 2 or 3 minutes, they, you know, that's what you want to see when you're three goals up, is to burn the clock, and they did that so professionally. I really encourage listeners to listen to any of the Maxi Gawn post-match interviews directly after the game. He did one with the ABC, and if you can hear it, if you could get a chance to listen to it, it's awesome. He goes into so much detail. He's clearly thrilled with the result. I suspect they had a plan and they implemented it, but he talks about their time management. I forget the phrase he used. He used a number of times in that interview, but the way they managed the clock, and he said that the plan was always to manage the clock a little bit in the time in that last quarter, but someone should have given the two picket boys a memo, because it wasn't part of the plan for Cos to take off and run the length, you know, to run 100 metres and then kick to Latrell. It's quite, yeah, if you get the opportunity to have a listen to it, because ABC post-match, it's a terrific interview and really, really insightful. He's terrific to listen to, Maxi. He's a student of the game, and boy, did he give Witt a bath. So the top five pressure points, Chandler, Sparrow, Caleb Windsor, Jack Steele, and Harris Sharp. Harris Sharp, what a player he's been for us this season. Alrighty, okay, now we're going to jump into the listen questions now. As I said at the top, I've put them through my SLM, the Bin Man artificial intelligence, and we'll come up with these top 10 questions. Thanks to everyone who posted questions. I apologize, I didn't do what Andy does so well and write them all down, so you know who you are. Big thanks to all of you for doing so. So running through these questions, was this the closest thing to a four-quarter effort seen for a while? So yeah, I put all of these in, and then I've come up with these 10 questions based on what people asked. Yes, it is. And both in terms of attitude, we were switched on from the get-go. We, apart from our inaccuracy, we probably go in at quarter time ahead. We probably deserve to be. I love how we're running out games. You don't run out games and have your highest pressure rating in a game, 190 in this game, as I mentioned before, without being super fit. They are talking about, when you hear players say the same thing over and over, you know it's a theme. They are talking regularly about how fit they are, their confidence in running out games. Melksham did it afterwards, so did Maxi. So yes, this is I don't think we put in a four quarter effort almost at all last season. I think because we weren't fit enough, that was one of the factors. We clearly are, but mentally they're switched on. They would have been really happy not going in at quarter time being down, obviously. But they certainly would have been happy with the intensity and effort, the coaching staff, that is. I think I heard on one of the, I listened to the second replay, but it was on in the background, and I think I heard them say our percentage in the last quarter is 280 or some such. So it just shows how well we're running out games. Terrific four-quarter effort. They'd be really thrilled with that. There was very few things you could criticise from an effort level and consistency for that. Really, really impressive. Did the team break close to even for the first quarter despite being down at the start? As I've said, yep, 100%. In fact, I think that first 10 minutes outside of that, we pretty much dominated the game. Maybe dominate's the wrong word. Maybe that's over-egging the pudding a bit. Because it's not as if they played a really poor game. It's not as if they had a shocker, like, you know, a top team suddenly just plays really poorly for whatever reason. I thought they played well and we just played a lot better. So, yes, I think we did more than break even for the first quarter. I thought we were the better side in the first quarter. They took their chances and, you know, it really is the most underrated stat in footy, accuracy, isn't it? So they did take their chances. They kicked well. And, you know, they looked like every inch of a top four side. And maybe that lulled them into, I don't know, maybe they thought they were going to come out and destroy us. And then they did in the first few minutes of the game, first 10 minutes. And maybe they were a bit surprised that we stuck with them in our intensity. But right through the game, I felt like we were the better team. So, you know, that was a fantastic feeling. Should Jake Melksham be managed week to week given he looks sore in the late game? That's a great question. I was wrong on this. I said both on Demon Land during the week, on the footy forum, on the last week's Demon Land podcast, and on the standalone stats file podcast, of which, by the way, there won't be one this week because I can't do two of these, I didn't think Melksham was any chance of being selected based on what I saw at Footscray. Didn't look quick enough, looked injured, his knee was strapped up. So I literally, you know, not quick enough. I thought he may struggle to get in the game into the full stop. I could not have been more wrong. Very happy to have been proved wrong. Jake, if you are listening to this, I apologize. You were awesome. It was an awesome performance. What a brilliant mark that was. You know, I was sitting in the Olympic stand, so I had a great view of it. The crowd went nuts. And most importantly of all, I spoke about the importance of accurate kicking, went back and drilled it. A wonderful bit of football, but that wasn't just that. It was his leadership, the way he was talking to his other forwards. You know, I thought that was super impressive. His just general all-round play in that game was brilliant. And so, will he be managed week to week? I don't think so. I'm not sure. Look, they did it at Geelong. They manage players a lot at Geelong. So, you know, I think probably it was a lesson about how didactic I was about Jake Melksham being not played. Of course, that sets me up for being wrong. I was often wrong last season about who might be selected or who would be selected. And I like how King already has been unpredictable with some of his selections. So, you know, Riff going out and hopefully, you know, hopefully he's will come back in sooner rather than later and all is good on that front. But, you know, Jake Melksham was inspired, I think, partly to do tactical as well, just in that what I was talking about is really stretching them defensively. He hates that sort of idea that he's a defensive forward and kick four goals, so fair play. But he does, he does compete, really punch well above his weight for given his height in terms of ability to bring the ball down to ground. I did note after I heard that he came in, Paddy Cross jumped a lot of balls last week and brought the ball to ground, and that's Melksham's go. So, you know, two sort of undersized players that really compete well in the air, and if they can't mark it, bring it to ground. So from that perspective, it was actually quite a clever, almost like for like swap for Paddy Cross. Fantastic performance. I don't know about manage, but yeah, as I say, maybe, you know, the Geelong experience for King, that he might look to do that. So perhaps he will be. What is almost, well, not almost, 100%, he'll play next week, and I doubt this was part of the thinking, but there's a lovely symmetry that he'll play his 250th game of AFL football against Essendon next week. Terrific. Another 250th game. I can't imagine that, you know, we're certainly not a team that should be, you know, at the stage of our development. You know, you should never be thinking this, but we shouldn't be taking the Bombers lightly. We can be beaten. Any team can be beaten. But this is the sort of thing, apart from the fact that obviously we owe them, Maxi said as much straight after the game. So it's clearly in their mind. So it's, but the fact that Jakey Melksham, Jake the Snake, is playing his 250th gives the team yet another reason to really invest in next week. So yeah, fair play, Jake. I was wrong. You were awesome. And looking forward to celebrating your 250th game next week. Can the two old all veterans be retained in the side rather than dropped. I actually can't. This is the 70% error rate, or no success rate of the bin man artificial intelligence, the BI or the BIA. I'm starting to muddle up my acronyms. Tommy Mack maybe, and Melksham. Tommy Mack was solid again. Terrific performance, I thought. Made a couple of fumbly errors, but not too many. I think King will be making more horses for courses this year, and if they're earning their spot, I think they can be retained. Well, certainly Melksham and T Mack, they did in this game. Can't see why they wouldn't next week. This was a really interesting question. Was the umpiring in the third and fourth quarters as bad as perceived, or was it other team blindness? Now, I would have said before watching the replay that 100% it was as bad as perceived. But watching the replay, there probably was, to be fair, a bit of a sort of other team blindness and the emotion of the day. Having said that, Williamson just seems to just crucify us every single time. It's not so much, it's two things. It's one, he just seems to strike me as an umpire who likes to impose himself on the game. And, umpires, the best umpires are seen, not heard, so to speak. You just don't want to notice them. The best umpires you don't notice, and I'm always noticing him. He does things like, basically refusing Langdon's request to check the arc, and they did check the arc for the on the full, and of course it wasn't on the full. And then there was another one where the ball, which wasn't marked in a central umpire miles away from that, said no, it didn't bounce. Then there was another couple where he got overruled by the non-officiating umpire. The other thing is that really drives me nuts, and he, to me, was the this was really evident, and in my critique of him, was not paying free kicks out there, like the one that Sparrow, I think it was in the third quarter, clear holding the ball on the Shane Warne stand wing, had to be paid, doesn't get paid. They score a goal from the next possession chain. It just drives me nuts, but. Yeah, the short answer to the question was it probably wasn't as bad as it felt like at the game. Mind you, at the game, like, the crowd were really booing, and there's only 24,000 people. And if you weren't there live, it really, really sounded loud. If we can get 40, 50,000 people there against the Lions, for instance, that noise of affirmation, we can bring it. And I know that the club want that. King mentioned that a number of times. And I think we were super vocal as fans. And it was great to hear. The energy was great to hear. Again, one of the funnest, best wins I've had the pleasure of watching in a long, long time. Was this the best defensive midfield performance the team has had in a long, long time? Speaking of long time, yes, short answer. Fantastic performance from the mids. Steele, hats off to him. His performance was first class from a defensive perspective. He completely gave round no time, no space. As I mentioned at the top in why we won, I thought our ability to squeeze up our defense and offense, and that all-team offense, all-team defense philosophy, meant that the ball was often in congestion, and our tackling, from our mids, but also our halfback and those utilities I've been talking about, were super impressive. And just while I think of it, another really impressive thing is I've heard King say that he wants our defenders scoring goals and being involved in scoring chains. So he would have been thrilled, absolutely thrilled, that Lindsay, Salo, and Colt all got goals from halfback flank. That's really important. That's the sort of gap between, I think, the Lions and the rest of the competition, is that sort of fleet of mid-sized players who, the Ashcrofts and Jai Lomans, and everyone knows them, that they... Like, that's the big gap. And if we can bridge, we need our Rivers and our mids and our Cullies at Langford who kick goals. And, we need Chin, we need though Langdon kicking goals, and our halfback flanker utilities like Lindsay, like Salem, and like Colt if he's going to be continue playing halfback flank. So, yes, I thought it was a terrific defensive midfield performance. Good coaching as well, I think. Really, really good coaching. And so credit must go to the whole coaching team, not just King, definitely to Jonesy for his performance as midfield coach. Did the tackling pressure from Sparrow, Steele, Pickett, Windsor and Agon effectively set the tone for the game? I absolutely agree that it did, or think that it did. You know, I mentioned that enough or through the show. Terrific pressure. The tackling was great. Watching the replay just earlier today, you know, that can, every time they turn, they ran into someone. And it wasn't just those players. You know, Colt was really strong over the ball. Salo too, really awesome. How was Jack Steele's performance, specifically his 11 clearances and 18 contested possessions? How has that impacted the midfield? I talked about it earlier. You know, I think that get the numbers, they're awesome. What I love about is his leadership. And you know, whatever the sort of fugazi is around track and Klaz, you know, it's hard to say that each of them were were great on-field leaders in the last few years. Jack Steele's performance yesterday was just phenomenal, really phenomenal in terms of the numbers, but just his leadership and also his decision-making. I don't really sort of watch other players very closely from other clubs, but I was really surprised at, I've been really surprised at how, you know, how strong his decision-making is, how his kicking is, how good his kicking is. Really, really, really impressive performance. As much as anything, you know, from a leadership perspective in terms of impact on the rest of the midfield and the rest of his teammates. Sort of a related question is, how would the team look now if Christian Petrarca and Clayton Oliver had been traded out a year earlier? Who knows? You know, maybe we do better next year and they don't sack Goody. I don't know. I think that both of those players, again, leaving aside the Fugazi, neither are quick. And I think that under this current way footy's been played, and in a way, King's exemplar of it, leg speed and raw athletic ability and aerobic tank, like Sharp and Langdon are the two players that I think best exemplify that. It is so critical, and neither of them are super strong in that space. Well, obviously, Clayton isn't, and Christian's looking better, but he's never going to be quick. If they'd been traded out a year earlier, I don't know what who knows what would have happened. I'm really happy with where the team's at. I'm all in on King. I'm all in on this game plan. I mean, who wouldn't be? It is just awesome to watch. So much fun kicking goals. 100 point is clearly the new benchmark, and I heard Maxi reference it. So under it was famously, what was it, 65 or something nuts under Goodwin a few years ago. You know, then I think it was 80 last year, or 24 and 25 under Goodwin. 100 points is clearly their number that they want to get to. There's something like 93% or 94% of times, if you get to 100 points first, the team goes on to win. That makes for exciting footy. I mean, just already this season, just been some electric bits of play, like Coz, Luttrell, Chin yesterday was awesome. As I said, Sparrow's been brilliant. There's just been some phenomenal fun footy to watch, and long may it continue. I'm all in. This is super exciting. What is the potential? So last question's a great question. What is the potential for this group's success during the 2026 season? Look, you know, it's obviously, you know, it's an interesting question. For me, this sounds like ridiculous cliche, but I'm really happy to watch week in, week out without sort of getting ahead of myself or ourselves in terms of what the season would look like. But I did say at the beginning of the season that, you know, I thought finals were a realistic chance because, as been pointed out by a number of commentators, we've got a really good mix of really good, you know, we've got 8 or 9 premiership players who played yesterday. And, you know, some of them are elite. Maxi's having his best season ever, almost, you could argue. He's been unbelievable this season. You've got Coz, who's now, you know, almost, could be a senior player and certainly playing with leadership. You've got, you know, players like Lever, who is now playing his best footy that he has in a couple of years. I think you've got Sparrow, who's stepped up. And you've got the younger players who, you know, I think Xavier Lindsay is going to be a total star. He'll be captain of Melbourne Footy Club, mark my words. Langford, I can't believe the sort of people have gone off on Demonland and on him up into this game. He's just a terrific player. You've got, you know, players like Sharp who have stepped up. So I think finals are a realistic chance, but, you know, what's the... You know, group, what's the potential for this group success during this season? I'd say finals. And so it also speaks to the question about, is this a rebuild or refresh or reset? And as I said at the beginning of the season, my feeling is it's, you know, it's more than a rebuild. Like a rebuild is you accept four or five wins for the season. We weren't, not with it, you know, a demographic in our list. That was never going to be the benchmark. Interestingly, Melk was asked that same question. You know, are you thinking finals? And he's on the ground afterwards. Sarah Jones was interviewing, who, by the way, she's an excellent interviewer. They should put her on the coverage much, much more than she is. And Melksham is another player who's really interesting to listen to being interviewed because he's really, really honest. And he said, yes, of course, that's what we're aiming for, was, you know, and we think it's a realistic chance. And I do too, based on that. I think there's a big gap, as I've mentioned before, between the top teams. And I feel like we're, you know, that I wouldn't over-index that performance. You know, it's still a week-to-week thing. But, you know, I think we're in that middle group of play team from maybe 6 through to 12. Finals are a realistic chance for us. And keeping in mind, we've got some sort of, hopefully, some selection pressure. Kent Field played well, kicked four for Casey. I haven't watched that game, but it sounded super exciting in the comments on Demonland. Jeffo kicked four, could have kicked more. I read a number of people say he was probably the best player or played better than Kenfield. So I think AMW will come into that side. We've got Xavier Taylor will eventually come into that side. Matthews might be a bit further away. So there's a pressure from underneath finally a little bit. But yeah, look, I'd agree with Melky. Their expectations at the beginning of the season were finals. That's what he said. And so there's nothing to change. They're now 3-1. I'm getting ahead of myself. If we end up 4-1, we could see the difference that makes to the entire season, starting 0-5 last season. It really, really killed it, killed our season last year. You can't really get going after that. Next week we should win. I'm hoping that, you know, I can't see them not coming with the right attitude. If they do, I suspect what will happen is we'll really, really look to go the other way with our handball gains. Expected to be back up in 300s range. Keeping in mind, just on the handball gains, meters gained, 63 for this match. In the third quarter last week against the Blues, 157 meters gained by hand in that single quarter alone. So it really gives a sort of good feeling of the different way we play. But I suspect we'll go back to long forward handballs last week and really, really look to test the Bombers' defense. Be prepared to give up goals on the turnover because they're not going to hurt us the way Fremantle did and the way that Suns might have if our defensive system and defensive structure hadn't been so effective. So I think that we could really, you know, do a number on them and geez, we owe them. And I thought it was really interesting, as I mentioned before, Gorney said straight after the match, we owe them. They've beaten us last three times. So I suspect it's, you know, the club have framed it that way. Melky's 250th. I'm actually expecting us to go in fired up, playing at Adelaide Oval on a ground that suits us, and I think we'll hammer them. That's my feeling. Speaking of hammering them, and this anyone who got to the end of the stats stats file podcast last week, I said that, you know, I was relatively confident that the odds were a bit long for us last week, but that if you did want to have a bet, go the total match point bet. It was a winner. Such an exciting game of footy. So I'm going to watch the replay again, probably for the third time before the game on the weekend. Of which I think that, you know, we'll win. And so, you know, if you were looking and having a bet in that game, is the over, whatever the line is, I'm not even sure what it is. But, I'd probably have to look before. But I suspect we'll win and win pretty easily. I'm thinking a 5-goal plus win, maybe even more. And so again, don't want to get ahead of herself, but they've been pretty poor this week, Essendon, and their weaknesses, particularly they haven't really, they're not particularly far side, but, you know, as everyone knows, their defensive structures and systems are their really key weakness. And so I think we'll be too strong for them in that regard. And they really haven't got the weapons to hurt us on offense and on turnover. So I'm looking forward to next week's game. Thanks for listening. Hopefully we'll have a big week next week. I'll be doing the podcast again next week, and a similar giving it, Andy will take the file and then he'll post it when he can. He won't be able to when you're listening to this, obviously. So probably Tuesday next week this will come out on Tuesday as well. Everyone have a great week, and support the D's next week against the Bombers.
That was Bin Man with a combined edition of the Demonland podcast and the Stats Files. A big thank you to Bin Man for holding down the fort whilst I'm away on holidays. This is how the Demonland podcast and the Stats Files will be presented over the next few weeks until I return for the Anzac Eve clash. Bin Man will be back next week following our Gather Round clash with the Bombers. See you then. Go Demons.
Go Red Leggers.
It's a grand old flag. Flying flag, it's an emblem for me and for you. Well, it's the emblem of the team we love, the team of the red and the blue. Well, every heart beats true for the red and the blue as we sing a song for you. Should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the red and the blue. The team played fine in the year 39. We're the team that no one can lick, and you'll find us there after the final bell with the spirit of 1926. Well, every heart beats true for the red and the blue as we sing this song to you. Should old acquaintance be forgotten,